Well, folks, last Sunday we returned to the story. This is our year-long journey from Genesis to Revelation, all the way through the workings of God. What has God been doing in the beginning? What is He doing now? And where is God taking us in the end? And what a marvelous journey it has been to date. We come to week 20, which is the story of Esther. I'm not going to read up front a chunk of the story. And this is because I want to encourage each and every one of you to make the time during this coming week to read the story of Esther. It's not long. You will do it in one sitting, maybe in an hour or less. But it is by far and away one of the best stories in the whole of the Bible. So pick out your copies of the story if you have one, or find a Bible at home, or go online and get the scriptures online, and make a commitment that sometime during this coming week, say to yourself, I'm going to read the story of Esther. It's an inspirational story, and you will not be disappointed. And hopefully, by my sharing around the story today, when you go to read it for yourself, it will make some sense. So instead, our scripture lessons, rather than all being at the beginning, will be scattered through what I am going to say. I want to begin, though, by saying this. I never quite know whether to laugh or cry when I hear people suggesting that the Bible is out of date. I just don't know what is meant by that. Is it because it was written a long time ago? Well, if that's true, then we would have to write off Shakespeare and all of the great writers from the past. And of late, I was back in The Merchant of Venice, the first time since I was sitting my standard grades. And I was reminded that the writing of Shakespeare, though perhaps archaic in tone, deals with the human nature in ways that are as relevant now as when the bard first put quill to parchment. And so to suggest that the Bible is out of date just because it was written a long time ago is nonsense. The Bible is about human nature. And human nature has not changed since Adam and Eve. Oh, we might think that we are smarter now. We've sent a man to the moon. But our moral nature, our makeup, is unchanged. And that is why the Bible is as relevant now as ever it has been. Well, the story of Esther is just one example of a part of the Bible that gives fantastic insight into human nature. But not only what humans are like, it shows us something of what God is like. And God too is unchanging. Now let's just put Esther in its setting, in its context. Last week Stuart spoke of the return home, when some of the Jews who had been in exile in Babylon started the journey home, the journey back to Jerusalem and to the Promised Land. And many did that, made that journey. Next week we'll hear of the work that they did in rebuilding the walls and rebuilding the city of Jerusalem. But while many decided to go home to the Promised Land, some decided that they were now perfectly well settled, that they would stay on in Babylon. 3 generations have passed. Many of them would never have known the Promised Land. All they knew was Babylon. And so some stayed put. Esther's story is set among those Jews who didn't go back to the Promised Land, who remained on in Babylon. And when is it taking place? Well, some 400 or so years before the time of Jesus. By now, the Babylonian Empire is beginning to crumble. It's reaching the end of its time. And actually, it's not hard to see why that should be. When a nation, when a whole way of life has given itself over to pleasure and self-gratification and unrestrained materialism, when these things have become dominant, then the writing is well and truly on the wall. You could see the very same things with the Roman Empire, and as I suggested a few months back, I wonder if we can see the same in the Western world as we have known it. That it has given itself over to unrestrained materialism. And if so, then its days are numbered. King Xerxes, the emperor by this time, read what we have here. He gave a banquet for the officials and the nobles of the Babylonian Empire. If I was inviting friends for a meal, it would be for Friday night, and I'd make sure they went home. This feast lasted 6 months. Partying for 6 months. Now, right there and then, you know that something has gone wrong with the society if they have the time on their hands, that for a whole 6 months they can do nothing but enjoy themselves. And at the heart of it all was the king showing off, self-glorification. This is who I am. And look at all that I have. Now, when they got to the end of this great period of feasting and partying and banqueting, look what they did at the end of the 6 months. The king gave another banquet for 7 days. Well, if nothing else, it could be said that he knew how to party. Folks, this is not to say that enjoying yourself is wrong. And there have been times when Christianity has been dour and has been nothing but a killjoy. I have nothing to do with that brand of Christianity. It wasn't what Jesus was about. We need to be very careful as Christians and as the church, particularly more mature and older Christians, that we are not down on particularly young people enjoying themselves. I hope you can enjoy yourself all the way through your days. But young people in particular enjoy themselves. It's what they do, and we should rejoice with them in that. But here is the word of warning. When partying, enjoyment, pleasure seeking, call it what you will, when it is, see the bottom words, without restriction, you have a problem. The technical term for that is hedonism or hedonism. And that means pleasure for pleasure's sake. The goal of my life is to enjoy myself. When you make that the goal for your life, you will lose the point of your life. We all need boundaries in life. Like it or not, we all need some restrictions in life. We all need to know that there are some lines beyond which we don't go. So please hear me very carefully. This is not to say that enjoyment and parties and all are wrong, not for a minute. But it is to say that enjoyment for its own sake and without restriction will always lead to a downfall. We need restrictions in our lives. So the story begins with this period of banqueting, and one person comes to the fore in the story. She is Queen Vashti. Now, Esther is always held up as the heroine of the piece, but for my mind, Vashti, Queen Vashti, is every bit as much as a heroine as was Esther. You can see here in this verse that she was being used by the king as, again, a way for him to show off. Folks, what we have here is an example of what might be called the objectification of women. When women are turned into objects to be handled, looked at, and owned. Now, I began by saying that the Bible isn't out of date. If you think that page 3 photographs still have a place in 21st century society, then you too are indulging in the objectification of women. You're allowing us as a society to turn women into objects. It's exactly what King Xerxes did. Turned his queen into an object that he could parade in front of the others to ogle at. As if he owned her and could do what he liked with her. It's all too prevalent in many cultures, but not least, I don't think, even still in part in our own. But if you ever wanted to know a woman who was ahead of her time, someone who understood the rights of a woman, then it was Vashti. And if you now, as a modern woman, believe in women for women's sake and not as attachments to men, then you should have for yourself Vashti as one of your heroines. She was ahead of her time. Because though the king ordered his officials to bring her out that she might be paraded in front of his hangers-on, Vashti refused. I love those words. Vashti refused. She was brave enough to stand up and say, I am not going to be used like that. I am not going to be treated like that. I am not owned by anyone. Vashti stands for the empowerment of women. So we need to rejoice in her example. Because no matter how we have tried in one way or another, we still live in a world where women are less equal. It's a kind of twisted thing to say, less equal. But it is true. And way back then, Vashti stood up and says, I'm not buying into that anymore. Wow, what courage we find in her. She incurs the wrath of the king. Can you imagine the way in which he was humiliated? He has asked for his queen to be brought through, to be shown off, and she refuses. She incurred the wrath of the king and was deposed as queen and from her throne as a result. Folks, again, I want to say, the way in which she was treated, to her shame, is still the way at times women are treated in this world. And yes, even in our own society, when women are abused in any way, when there is violence against women of any kind, then something is tragically wrong. Just about a month ago, Nola Watson and I were guests at a conference in the Carnoustie Hotel. It was a conference dealing specifically with violence against women in Scotland today. And it was horrific to hear some of the tales of what is still happening, often behind closed doors. A silent and hidden problem. Violence against women. If there's anything the church needs to speak out against, it's that. And it's partly why we support here in Arbroath, St Andrew's Church, why we support the Women's Refuge in Arbroath. We find practical ways to support it. We want to stand alongside women who have been abused, who have had violence visited upon them, and who have shown the bravery of Vashti by escaping from that situation and fleeing from it. But often they have to do so with nothing or with all of their possessions in a Morrison's plastic bag. And to those women, we need to stand with them. And that's what we aim to do here at St Andrew's Church. So you're telling me the Bible's out of date? The story of Queen Vashti speaks to our society today. As I said, Vashti, for her troubles, is put off the throne. And so Xerxes finds himself without a queen. How does he go about replacing Vashti? Well, more of the objectification of women. He holds a latter-day version of the Miss World competition. He asks that all the most beautiful women be drawn from all over the kingdom and that they be paraded in front of him. And that from them he would pick the one who stood out to him the most. And the young woman who stood out to him, of all the many hundreds who were before him, was Esther. A Jew, although this was not known at this point in the story. She had been adopted as a child by Mordecai, an older cousin. When her mother and father died, he took her on as his own daughter. And just while we're passing, and just while we're making the point about the Bible being relevant today, there's a reference to adoption, if you like. And what greater service than a Christian couple, what greater service can a Christian couple offer in today's Scotland than to consider fostering and adopting and caring for children who need that care? There was Esther, fatherless, motherless. Mordecai took her on as her own. I salute all those in our church, of whom there are quite a few, who have or still are in that business of fostering, caring for, and adopting. It is a Christian service, as far as I am concerned. So Mordecai had raised Esther, and here she is now as part of this beauty pageant, and we read that the young Esther was spotted, if you like, that she stood out from all the others, and that Xerxes made her the new king. Now, this was to prove entirely fortuitous. But I don't mean that in a kind of lucky sense. I think if we believe in God being active in our world, then we look beyond luck. And we talk about, instead, providence. Providence is when we mean that somehow God is involved in our lives, often even ahead of us. So Esther becomes the queen. And it so happens that she becomes queen at exactly the right time in the history of the Jewish people and of the Empire of Babylon. I say this again, not just by lucky chance, but because God is in the world and God is at work in his world. Let me explain. At this time, there was a man called Haman. He, for whatever reason is not absolutely clear, had it in for the Jews. And when opportunity arose, it came about this way. Mordecai refused to bow down and acknowledge him and worship him. Well, just like Daniel before him, he was only going to worship God. He refused to bow down. Well, this was Haman's moment. And so he had Mordecai arrested for refusing to bow down. And he hatched a plan. He said, all of those Jews, they're a scourge in our nation. Let's do away with them all. Let's eradicate them. You think the Bible's out of date? Genocide. That's what was being proposed back then. We still live in a world where genocide rears its head. Yesterday at the Guild Coffee Mornings, through there, there was a stand for Rwanda, for work being done in Rwanda. Go and tell the people in Rwanda that genocide and the events of the Bible are out of date. And this was what was being proposed, that the Jews would be wiped off the map. 20th century history, folks, way back then. Haman proposed that the Jews be wiped from the map. But their saving grace was in the fact that Esther happened to be queen at this time. And as a Jew, she took her courage and she went before the king and she asked him to rescind this proclamation against the Jews. And because she had won the king's favour, the king agreed, and the Jews were saved. Here's the whole business. He gave her the queen's role. Mordecai would not bow down before Haman. Haman's rage was against him. He looked for ways to destroy all of the Jewish people. But the day was saved by Esther, and that she was the queen. And Mordecai says to her, maybe, I think he means definitely, it was for this very time that you became queen. It was for this very time that you are living. And in those times, in those moments, Esther had a sense of her destiny. She was in the right place at the right time. That was her destiny. And she saved her people. And folks, just as Esther had a purpose for her life, my very, very real belief is that that's true for each and every one of us. Maybe not so dramatically as she, but every one of us has a purpose for our lives. Every one of us has some destiny. We're not here by mistake. We're not here just passing through. We're all on this earth with a purpose and with a reason. And part of life is discovering that, as Esther did. And so the Jewish people were saved, and great joy and happiness and gladness broke out among them with feasting and celebrating. I was saying to my home group on Monday night, the Jewish people could teach us even now so much as Christians, so much about how to enjoy yourself. Jews are wonderful enjoyers. And there they were back then, celebrating that they had been saved. And look at the bit at the bottom. Many others became Jews as a result of all that had happened. I pray that as we Christians are joyful, because we are saved by Christ, that too will be evangelistic, that people will see the joy that we Christians have in our lives and will want something of it from them for themselves, just as others came to the Jewish nation all those centuries ago. So be filled with joy. We too have cause for celebration. Let's live it out in our lives that others would see and hear and believe. Folks, this is the story of Esther. It's a cracker. Go home this week and read it for yourself. The story of Esther. Thanks be to God. Amen.